something that's been in the news fairly recently, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, the TGA, and some potential, shall we say, hiccups with how it's all structured at the moment. From the University of Canberra and law academic, Dr. Wendy Bonython joins us at the moment. Good morning, Wendy. What are some of the issues that have been raised at the moment with the TGA and how it's undergoing its role?
Hi, good morning. So at the moment, the TGA is attracting a fair bit of attention. There are a number of bills currently under consideration by the Commonwealth Parliament looking at some fairly superficial changes to things that are going on, particularly in the space of pharmaceuticals regulation. There's also a Commonwealth Senate inquiry on foot at the moment investigating the use of transvaginal meshes in women in Australia and looking, incidentally, at the role of the TGA in approving devices such as that for use in women in Australia.
So I guess some may say that they're potentially the relationship between the TGA and the health industry at large is a bit of an uncomfortable one at time to time.
Yeah, so certainly one of the things that is an issue is that, I mean, there are questions about the effectiveness of the regulator as a whole, because this isn't the first time we've seen an inquiry into a failed medical device. So in addition to the pelvic mesh inquiry that's currently underway, we've seen other Senate inquiries looking at the TGA. We've seen large-scale class actions around hip replacements and knee replacements and a range of other things, all of which suggest that perhaps it's time to have a close look at how these things are regulated. The TGA is funded on a cost recovery model by industry. So the people who are applying to have their goods approved for use for the market are essentially also the people who are paying to keep the lights on in the regulator.
And relationships like that can be a little bit murky or your boundaries a little bit not so defined from time to time. But Wendy, this is a bit scary because the sort of things you've been talking about are major medical episodes in people's lives, aren't they? And if we need to get these right.
Certainly. I mean, for the people for whom these devices do go wrong, the consequences are catastrophic. Some of the evidence given by patients who have had the pelvic meshes implanted have been really quite harrowing. You're talking about women who are unable to work, for example, who are going to be severely disabled for the remainder of their days. So it is really important that we do get it right, because when we get it wrong, it goes horribly wrong.
So considering, Wendy, we have had now inquiry after inquiry and we're back where we started again, what are some of the changes that you'd like to see take place, and maybe some of your colleagues and people that you've been talking to like to see happen?
Okay, so I think that one of the things that's worth noting is that people are concerned about that perception of capture. Whether or not the capture is occurring doesn't change the fact that nonetheless it is very much the case that the people that they're regulating are also paying the salaries and all of those sorts of things. We'd like to see a greater arm's length relationship between the provision of funding to the regulator and the people who are putting in applications for regulation. So whether that be greater accountability and transparency of those relationships. It goes across the relationships that the medical profession has with devices more broadly as well. One of the things that came out during the Senate inquiry was that one of the medical associations was quite extensively involved with the bringing to market of one of the devices that's currently under review. So more transparency, greater arm's length regulation, greater involvement of stakeholders in the form of consumers in a lot of the decision-making consultation processes as well.
I guess it all comes back to funding, doesn't it? I mean, if it's not being funded by by its current model, would that potentially mean as something that taxpayers would be able to step in and do to provide that arm's length reach?
That's one model, and certainly that's the model that was in place prior to the industry-funded model that we currently have. I think there are reasons why, from a taxpayer perspective, we probably wouldn't want to return to that. But it may simply be the case that there needs to be a more independent relationship between those who are paying the funding and how it's allocated and distributed within the agency once it gets it. The other thing that would be, I think, very useful in this space is to actually look at some research into what are the flow and effects of the harms that we see as a result of device failure. Very much at the moment, the focus has been on, well, let's fund the TGA with from the perspective of covering the costs of running it. And missing from many of those calculations are some of the hidden costs about the harms that occur when risks that we can't avoid do manifest. So things like the indirect costs on productivity to victims and their families, costs on Medicare, NDIS, social security services from people who are catastrophically injured as a result of these, looking at a more comprehensive analysis of some of the things that potentially can go wrong in this space.
Wendy, there's a lot in that. We might leave it there for this time around, but we'll watch it with a bit of interest. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us this morning.
Thanks a lot for your time.
There she is, Wendy Benython, Dr. Wendy Benython from the University of Canberra, and that cosy relationship with stakeholders and the Therapeutic Goods Association. 2NURFM, 25 past 11.